Welcome everyone to the second hour of the Sunday show. You are tuning into special International Women's Day programming at KPFA Radio. If you're just tuning in to the Sunday show, you've just heard an illuminating discussion about transnational black feminism with my fellow Women's Magazine Collective member, Margot Okazare-Rey. That was the first hour. It was amazing. Margot and I get to be your... that was amazing, Margot. Thank you. And I get to be your host for the second hour. My name is Vilma V, and I'm coming to you live from the KPFA studios here in Berkeley, California. As is typical, I'm broadcasting live from occupied land, a lonely territory on whose traditional, ancestral, and unceded land we are transmitting from and whose historical relationship with this land continues. Thank you to all the ancestors for another beautiful day on Mother Earth. And thank you. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in on this beautiful Sunday morning in the Bay Area. So before I get too far into the show, I do want to thank Philip Muldery for giving up his space for us to celebrate International Women's Day today, and to all the other regular Sunday programmers who made room for this to happen. I really want to thank the organizers and producers of all of today's IWD programming. A lot of work goes into producing something like this. And I'm very proud of what they've all put together and very proud to be part of it. So I want to thank them and the other staff, both paid and unpaid, and of course all the volunteers at KPFA, without whose love of the station none of us would be here. And finally, last big thank yous to the listeners and their love, all the love that they have showed by donating so generously to our fund drive that just ended on Friday, successfully, I might add. So thank you. Thank you so much for donating to the station. And I hope that you enjoy the next hour and the entire day, really, that we have planned for you. I just want to say we all love you right back. So my topic for today's show is 21st century feminism. What does it mean? What is it? Particularly when it comes to younger women. So you just heard a whole hour about feminism, transnational feminism. Here I'm going to focus on women who are under 35 years of age. I want them to join me in this discussion. For that, I have two guests who are young women. One is a senior at Berkeley High, and her name is Mia. I'm only going to use first names for privacy purposes. And another one is a millennial from Los Angeles. Talking too fast, I'm so excited. Both will be my live guests this morning. And given that it is the Sunday show, which is people tune in every Sunday, I want to make sure that you know right away that this is a live program. It's not recorded. And I am going to be opening up the phone lines this morning. So my hope is that this will be an interactive live hour, at least the last half. And it just won't be the same without you and your call-ins and comments and questions. So I'm going to give you the number right now. I'm going to give it out early so you have it ready. So when the time comes, you'll call us, 1-800-958-9008. I think I'm going to try to open the phone lines a little bit earlier than Phil usually does. I'm going to try to aim for about the half hour point here so that there's lots of time and opportunity to get your thoughts and ideas and comments and questions about 21st century feminism and International Women's Day right here on KPFA. I'm excited that we're going to get to listen to what you all, our amazing KPFA audience, has on your mind. Again, that's going to be the latter part of the hour, 10:30 or so, where you can ask questions of my guests, or you can tell us how you're celebrating International Women's Day, which is actually tomorrow, but we're starting here early, or you can simply make a general comment about what you're hearing on the show. Again, the number to call, 1-800-958-9008, and I'll let you know when to do it. Again, the topics, 21st century feminism, what is it? What do young women think about it? Feminism in the new century. We're 20 years into it. It's been a whopper. Okay, but let's be clear. International Women's Day is actually tomorrow. That's Monday, March 8th. Today, for solidarity with women around the world. International Women's Day is the same day, March 8th, all over the world. In many countries, it's an actual national holiday where women get the day off. And unlike Mother's Day, where, yes, women are celebrated, but that day is more contingent on whether you have children, whereas International Women's Day is just a celebration of women and all her forms beyond, you know, her reproductive work. So I love that it includes every woman, not just mothers, but women who are child-free and every person who presents as a woman. Tomorrow is for you, and this all day we're going to be celebrating you. Women of the world want and deserve an equal future, free from stigma, stereotypes, and violence. A future that's sustainable, peaceful with equal rights and opportunities for all. To get us there, the world really needs women at every table where decisions are being made. This year, the global theme for International Women's Day is Women in Leadership Achieving an Equal Future in a COVID-19 World. This day recognizes the tremendous efforts by women and girls all around the world in shaping and creating that more equal future. And hopefully, recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic will help us get there. Of course, the pandemic highlights the gaps that still remain for women's full and effective participation and leadership in all areas of life. Women have to be at the table because that drives progress for everyone. Of course, women are still underrepresented in public life and decision making, as revealed in a recent UN Secretary General's report. Women are heads of state or government, heads of state or the government in only 22 countries, and just under 25% of national parliamentarians are women. In fact, at the current rate of progress, gender equality simply among heads of government will take another 130 years, according to that report. So that's something we're definitely going to discuss with my guests as soon as we get started here. And before I get started with that topic at hand and introduce our guests for the hour, I wanted to give a little homework to all of the listeners out there. Here's the thing, what I want you to do. Tomorrow on International Women's Day, I want you to call, text, or email, just connect with at least two women. Here are the women. One is someone you're related to. It could be your mother, could be your sister, your long-lost cousin, your aunt. Wish them a happy International Women's Day. Many may not be aware that tomorrow is actually International Women's Day, since there's so much going on with the pandemic, with the vaccine rollout, with the $1 trillion relief bill that just passed in Congress, that things could get lost. And we don't want that to happen. So tomorrow, I want you to call someone that you're related to and wish them a happy International Women's Day. And then I want you to call a young woman, and you can know her or be an acquaintance, but I also want you to call a young woman, and I'm calling a young woman, though I consider myself young at heart. I'm not under 35, and that's what I'm thinking. Under 25 bonus points. Okay? Calling a young woman under 25, under 35, and maybe someone you don't normally reach out to. So that's how you're going to celebrate. That's your homework. And that way we can keep the celebration going 24 hours today and well into tomorrow. You can also comment about this experience, about calling someone or talking to someone about IWD at KPFA org. And you could do that under this show's archive or under any program that's airing today. Go ahead and comment so people know that this day has had a lot of meaning. Excuse me. So now I'm going to start. Are you with me on my guest? I'm looking for Mia, who's a senior at Berkeley. How are you with me, Mia?
Hi, yeah, I'm here.
Great. And Lynette, who's a millennial from SoCal. She's a writer and an inclusion consultant in the greater LA area. And her life of activism actually began at the toddler age when she was 3, when Mamie Till Mobley chose her to perform excerpts of Dr. King's speeches at civil rights events all over the country. So since then, she's been active in mentoring BIPOC youth and doing her part to uplift women of all races, wherever she encounters them. Okay, so we're going to use first names to protect privacy. So this is Lynette and Mia. And so it allows my guests to give their unvarnished opinion about 21st century feminists. So Mia, let me start with you. Do you consider yourself a feminist? And if so, why?
Yeah, I do consider myself a feminist. I think that as I've grown, I've been able to deepen my understanding of what feminism really is. And I think I've kind of had to align myself with a lot of those ideals as a young woman. And I've had to start and do the work within myself before I was able to do that for and with my community. I think I've had to unlearn a lot of biases and pressures and opinions to love myself truly and to be the best person I could be, the best woman I could be, and that's what led me to then want to help my community do the same.
Great. And Lynette, do you consider yourself a feminist? Why or why not?
I absolutely do. I consider myself a feminist, but more and more lately, I I'm starting to consider myself a womanist, which is a term that I believe Audre Lorde coined, that addresses all of just the intersectionality of being a woman, especially a woman of color, where you are also experiencing racism for your race, but also a completely different kind of sexism because of your race. So I consider myself a feminist, a womanist. You know, for everyone who presents themselves as a woman or experiences what a woman does, I think it's a little more inclusive.
Yeah, that's an important thing. It was one of the topics I hoped that we could get into, which is like a womanist or versus a feminist. And I think a lot of it comes out of, and Lynette and I had an opportunity to have in a conversation before the show, and we were talking about second, third, fourth wave feminism and how often, especially during first and second wave feminism, Black women were excluded, women of color, Latina women, Native women were just not even on the radar. And womanist was a term that actually came to seem more encompassing. So I'm glad you bring that up already, Lynette. But let me tell you, let me ask you, how has the pandemic affected you? And has it changed your ideas about some of the feminism?
Well, I don't think that it has changed much for me. What I have noticed, though, is that being in close quarters with different people, I'm starting to notice that there are a lot of men who I have had more opportunity to speak to who consider themselves now to be feminist, and yet they are still kind of espousing some sexist views, and I don't know. I think that for me right now, feminism kind of means, in my age group, I think, babysitting the men who are trying to get on board, if that makes any sense at all, because it's just like, okay, I have to tell you that you're saying you're a feminist, but this is also actually, you know, very sexist, and you're kind of wanting your girlfriend or, you know, your wife or something to just be in the kitchen while you do the more important work. Your work is, you know, more important on Zoom or whatever, because, you know, people are afraid of losing their jobs, right? They're afraid of the insecurity that comes with COVID. And some people are just saying, well, hey, it kind of feels like we're reverting back to that 1960s, 1970s, 1980s standard where people are saying, hey, well, I make more money. You know, I make more money than you, so my job is more important right now because my job is the one that's going to keep us steady if one of us loses one, you know?
Exactly.
So that's been an issue.
So that is the voice of Lynette. She is my guest this morning. You're listening to the Sunday Show. My name is Vilma V, and we are celebrating International Women's Day. So what I want to, Mia, the same question about how the pandemic has affected you. And I know as a senior in high school, you've had nothing but online school. But has that, tell us a little bit about that and how do you think the pandemic maybe changes things going forward?
Yeah, I think I haven't noticed too much change in my classes. I think there has been a lot of stepping back and a lot of less sharing out, less women being vocal in the classroom just because of the way it's set up through distance learning. I do think that in my personal life, I've noticed a lot of pressures on, for example, most women in my life are educators, and I think a big thing has been a lot of pressure to take on sort of a caretaker role during this time, which, you know, as educators, it does come with the job partially, but I think there has been an emphasis on, you know, the women in my life having to do extra and take on this almost motherly role, where I don't know if that's completely necessary, but I do think that a lot of women have been faced with the same type of pressures right now is to step back from their individual selves and present sort of a motherly role to everyone, whether that be having to step back from your job and take care of your family. I think there is that expectation in a lot of families and a lot of communities, which I'm not sure if it's the most realistic or the most helpful for those women.
Sure, that's an astute observation. I think that's something that people have talked about on the national level, particularly when so many women lost their jobs right after the first lockdown, or lost or left their jobs because they had to become the primary caretaker, which is what Lynette was referring to about how whose job was more important. I think those are interesting points. One of the things I want to ask, Mia, I'll ask you this, and then Lynette, you can answer after she does. The impact of social media, there was none of this in the first, second, maybe even third wave. I think we're definitely in a fourth wave of feminism right now. Talk, Mia, can you talk a little bit about how social media, or what you think the impact of feminism has been on social media, or vice versa?
Yeah, I think this is also an interesting connection to the pandemic, because I feel like a lot of young people are on social media a lot more than we were before. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are negative and positive sides to it. I think that, you know, on social media, you find a lot of the pressures that young women are facing, whether that be physical, like looks-wise, mm-hmm. or just how it's supposed to be acting, how it's supposed to be dressing. And I think that is still super alive, but I think that also brings forth like the positive aspects of social media. So I've seen a lot of organizing and a lot of, positive accounts or positive pages that help young women find that confidence too. And I think that, you know, like this was mentioned before, I think for me personally, I didn't even know the term womanism, even though, you know, I'm a really big fan of Audre Lorde. And I think through social media, I was able to find people who could explain that to me and who could help me understand that, because I wasn't really finding that in my day-to-day life. So I think social media can be used as a really helpful tool for a lot of young women, even though it does have or it magnifies those pressures. And you do feel like you're comparing yourself a lot, especially during a time when a lot of us are on our phones and a lot of us are looking at these videos or posts or whatever. I think it has a positive effect and a negative effect.
And Lynette, what's your thoughts about social media and its impact on feminism?
Well, I think that as much as social media can just be a cesspool of toxicity, right? I do believe that it is such a wonderful, unprecedented, unifying tool. I mean, would the Me Too movement have existed without it? Mm. You know, would we have been able to say, time's up? I mean, you had Oprah at, I think it was the Oscars, saying, hey, time's up for these men. But would it have exploded the way it did without a hashtag behind it, without all of these people coming together and saying, hey, I've had the same experience, rather than just being in your circle of maybe 5 to 20 people and being embarrassed to talk about your experiences, or afraid to speak up in the workplace, or afraid to even speak up among your family? Social media let us know that there were so many millions of women who were experiencing the same thing. It stopped being a statistic, right? Mm-hmm. It stopped being a statistic, and it started being the neighbor. It started being your cousin. It started being, you know, the woman across the way from you in the grocery store, you know? And I think that that's a very powerful, like I said, unifying tool. I fear, though, that you're still going to have, of course, there's always the backlash. You're always going to have that. But I fear that there's also an element of exclusivity that is happening again, where you're talking about an issue and then excluding the people who are the victims of that issue. I hate to use that word victim, but, you know, the people who are experiencing the violence, whether it's physical or mental, of those issues. So it's you know, it's kind of two dozen in one hand, half a dozen in the other. We can use it for empowerment, but others can use it to tear us down. But the thing that we have to keep in mind is that, you know, we are together, we can be stronger. And I think that social media actually really does help us to remember that.
Okay. I'm going to jump around to different topics. I know we could spend this whole hour just talking about social media and Instagram and TikTok, but I'm going to move us around. But I think those are, so far, I think these observations are just right on. And it's interesting to see that I have so much, I can relate so much to what, you know, a high school senior is saying and what a millennial is saying. So it's very, very interesting to me. My next question, and Lynette, let's start with you on this one. What was it, if you think there was actually something, was there a specific event or experience that turned you into feminism or when you first became aware of it?
I think that I was always a feminist. I didn't have a word for it. I didn't have anything to articulate it, but I remember being very young. Like I said, you actually mentioned this earlier when you introduced me, that I spent a lot of time since a very young child with Mamie Till Mobley, who was herself, in her own way, a pioneer for feminism and social justice. If the listeners don't know who she is, I very strongly recommend that you look into the story of Emmett Till. It is just as relevant today as it was in 1955, and she was his mother, and she actually continued her work throughout, I think, the early aughts when she died. But she taught me through her and through Coretta Scott King and Rosa Parks and a bunch of other wonderful women that I was able to spend time with. They all taught me that, you know, just what oppression looked like, and that just because something because it's the way that it is, doesn't mean that that's the way it's supposed to be. And growing up in a very Christian home, there were a lot of things that I was not allowed to do, things that I was not allowed to say, things that I was not allowed to wear simply because I was a woman, and just none of it made any sense to me. And I was always kicking against it. And then I heard what a feminist supposed was, and it seemed like the way I heard it was just man-hating, and I didn't really think that that was how it didn't represent how I felt, so I didn't think that that's what I was. And then I met Dr. Kat, who you are familiar with, and she really broke it down for me, and I began to understand that no, feminist is what I had been this whole time. It's not about putting one gender above another and putting another down. It's all about the exact opposite of oppression. It's egalitarianism for everyone, and me being able to do exactly what the next man is doing, wear exactly what the next man is doing, and not have to worry, you know, being able to revel in my curves and my artistry through fashion without having to worry that I am, you know, making a man uncomfortable, shall we say.
Here. Mia, let me turn to you. Was there an experience or something that turned you towards embracing feminism, or tell us if there's something like that in your experience?
I also can't really remember a specific moment. I think I also grew up, you know, being told to love being a woman and to love other women around me. But I do think that going into high school, noticing a lot of different dynamics, and, you know, again, getting older and having to be more conscious of myself, I think that has, you know, pushed me to become a feminist or to fight for certain things. I think going to Berkeley High, I've met a lot of really powerful women and young women, my classmates, my friends, who have, you know, led super powerful movements at our own school, who have used their voices in really positive ways, and that has inspired me to make that connection to my own life and do it in my own way, whether that be through writing articles or just having those conversations with other friends. I think they have really inspired me, and that environment really inspired me to deepen my understanding of feminism and to make those connections to my own life also.
That is the voice of my guest, Mia. She's a senior at Berkeley High School, and I don't know if I mentioned that she also writes for the Berkeley High Jacket, which is the newspaper there. Mia, let me ask you about male allies. Are there male allies? Do you have you experienced that in high school?
Yeah, I have. I think there are male allies always, but I do think that young men also need to be open to hearing that they need to do more, or that they need to listen sometimes, instead of, I think sometimes they can be really eager to help without actually listening to those who need the help. Mm. But I have noticed a lot of young men stepping up and offering their support. I do think that there could be more of a conversation between young men, and in friend groups, or if that's, you know, a school-wide thing. I think that that's a really important step, is to just take it upon themselves to have those conversations and not always be dependent on other young women to help them learn whatever they're learning, and to be the best ally they could be. I think that's some learning that they have to, you know, they have to take that initiative as well.
That's right. Lynette, tell us your experience about male allies and male allyship. Does it exist?
Oh, it absolutely does. It absolutely does. But there's also a lot of performative allyship. And I don't know if it's necessarily fair to call it that. I think that a lot of the times what's happening is that we are in an age where people are being forced to be accountable for their actions and their views and what they say. And that's not something that we have, that we're used to. It's still something that's very new. So when you have a male who considers himself a feminist, but he's saying really sexist things and, you know, basically just perpetuating sexist actions, and you tell him, hey, that's actually sexist, and they get upset because they're not used to being told, hey, no, you're wrong, and having to accept that from a woman. And it's kind of like telling a person who is white that, hey, the thing that you have just said or you have done is actually racist, and they're angry, and they say, no, I'm not a racist, how dare you, but what you've done is racist. And it's something that we are, or I am, and I know that a lot of my female colleagues are, you know, having to fight through, is telling men, some men, that they are actually sexist, even though they are trying to, you know, present themselves as part of the solution. But there are plenty of wonderful men who I know who, when you tell them, hey, that actually makes me uncomfortable, that is sexist for this particular reason, they immediately shut it down. They, you know, feel bad about it because they actually do want to be a part of the solution, and they listen. And I think that what we have to work on as a society is making a safe space where we all feel that, you know, we can be corrected without it, you know, somehow marring our character. You know, and I feel that a lot of men feel that they're being marred somehow. But when we can get past that and we can just accept, oh, hey, okay, my behavior, my words are something that is hurtful to another person, I can change that. And there are men who feel that way.
That's right, because feminists do not hate men. What a concept.
Yeah.
We actually don't. Okay, so I am going to take a musical break. First, I'm going to give out the phone number, 1-800-958-9008. I'm inviting you to talk to these two women, Mia, Berkeley High School senior, member of Generation Z, Lynette, a millennial living in Los Angeles, and one who's well aware of the intersection of feminism and racism and all that, and she's a womanist. So the number to call, 1-800-958-9008. So we'll start taking calls after the musical break. I do want to say that Mia is a working woman, and she is going to her job. So she's only going to be with us for another 10 minutes or so, and then she's going to pop out. But Lynette and I will be here for the rest of the hour to hear your questions, comments. I'm looking for people's ideas about what 21st century feminism looks like, and what you're doing about International Women's Day, which is actually tomorrow on March 8th. So we'll take a quick musical break. Again, the phone number, 1-800-958-9008. Please give us a call, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Sunday Show. My name is Vilma V. We're doing special programming here on International Women's Day. That was Talia, Vengo Vengo, Mujer Latina. Before we take calls, and I'm looking for women and men who are interested in talking about 21st century feminism. The number to call is 1-800-958-9008. I have Mia, who's a senior at Berkeley High School, who's my guest. She's also a writer for the Berkeley High Jacket. And then I have Lynette, who is a millennial from Los Angeles, and she's also with us. I want to make two quick announcements. One is in honor of Berkeley High and the feminist movement that exists there. They are producing a show that is a take on the vagina monologues. It's called Our Monologues. It's something they do every year. They're going to do it this year on the lockdown. It's produced by feminists, and it's happening March 13th at 6 p.m. and March 20th at 7:30 p.m. It's directed by Risa Sundu and Rusa Carell, and it's going to be live streamed via YouTube. So for more information, you can go to ourmonologuesbhs@gmail.com. Check that out. So you want to check out what young feminists are writing, producing, and talking about? Tune into that March 13th at 6 and March 20th at 7:30 p.m. And also for the Puerto Ricans out there, the BASPR, B-A-A-S-P-R, is celebrating International Women's Month and Women Working for Social Change in Puerto Rico on Saturday, March 27th at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. There is going to be a forum, and this is also online. You can pre-register at bit.ly/PR change, and you're going to get the Zoom link. It features Caminando la Utopia, Taller Guaguarey, and Colectivo Ile. So you've got to check that out. That's March 27th, and that's put on here by BAASPR, BASPR, celebrating. Okay, let's go. Anonymous, you're on the air here on the Sunday Show. Go ahead. Okay. No, I guess he might have dropped off. I am looking for women to call us. Or Antonio, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Go forward. You're welcome to the Sunday Show.
Yes, I have a great respect for women, like the women who march in Russia in the early 20th century against the Tsar. Women like Rose Luxemburg, who was killed in Germany, member of the Marxist organization. Women like the woman who marched in Saigon with a Viet Cong with a pistol in her hand and a red hanky around her wrist. But when I hear women today using labels like sexist, male chauvinist, racist, that's all you have is labels to disqualify people. And I don't have no respect whatsoever for that kind of women.
Okay, Antonio, I'm going to let the women respond. What about labeling? Lynette, Mia's going to drop off pretty soon. So Mia, what do you think about the labeling aspect that this caller's talking about? Do you have thoughts about that?
I don't know how to answer. I feel like labels aren't as important. I feel like the messages that come with them are what needs to be paid attention to. I feel like, labels can just be words, and you just have to look a little deeper at what they mean.
Okay, Lynette, do you have a response?
I think I do. I'm honestly a little confused, because if you don't have a label to describe a behavior, how do you change something that you can't describe? How do you put it in a category and say, hey, these kinds of behaviors, these kinds of comments, these kinds of, whatever, are detrimental to your fellow humans, and these are the reasons why. I mean, labels aren't meant to criticize or meant to harm. They are meant to do exactly what they do, which is tell you what it is And, you know, so that we can have a compass, really, to help change our behaviors, to change some behaviors, to bolster others. So, I mean, I don't, if you want to eat a certain kind of food, don't you need to label it? You know, if you want to say like, hey, you know, these are allergies. Well, you know, we can't label that allergy. Well, then how do we keep people who have nut allergies safe from those foods? You know, if we don't label it, all we're trying to do is label certain behaviors, you know, so that we can keep them away from fellow humans.
Yeah.
So that they can no longer do any harm. Once again, I think I spoke about it before, not too long ago, about, you know, people just taking umbrage at being called out and being held accountable. That's all it is. It's just being held accountable. And being held accountable is going to hurt sometimes, but you know, you just have to know that you are human. We are all human, and we make mistakes, and these are the kinds of mistakes that we are just trying to correct right now. It doesn't mean that we are against men.
Yeah.
It's just that we are against the type of treatment that, you know, they are perpetuating against us. That's all.
Right on. Okay, the number again, 1-800-958-9008. About to lose Mia, so Mia, I'm going to let you go, but tell me a name of one feminist icon that you kind of look to for guidance and really care about.
You know, I did think about this beforehand, and it's funny because she was already mentioned, but Audre Lorde has been a huge inspiration for me and has totally changed my understanding of feminism. I think I always felt a little confused as to why it sometimes felt othering to be in certain feminist spaces, but Audre Lorde has really helped me understand that you do need to acknowledge differences between women and the different struggles that different types of women will face. So she's amazing, and I recommend reading all of her stuff.
Right on. Okay, Mia may drop off. I think she's going to be with us for a few more minutes. I'm looking for phone calls on the 21st Century Feminism, What Is It? Or you can comment about what you're doing for International Women's Day tomorrow, or you can ask a question. Lynette will still be around. She's a millennial from Southern California. And for now, I'm going to go to Kat in Oakland. You're on the air with the Sunday Show. Go ahead.
Hi, I've been listening to your show, and I like it, and I wanted to say thank you. This time last year, I had my mentee out from Florida, and we've been friends for 7 years, back when she was just finishing high school, and I was starting cancer treatment. I'm a filmmaker who wasn't able to entirely fulfill my goals, but over these years, I've been kind of influencing this young woman that really enriched my life, and is now 1 year after her visit that we were starting to shut down, and she went home in a panic and she didn't know what she was going to do. She was in the middle of school, and now she's a designer on a feature after finishing a series at Netflix in wardrobing. And to be honest, I'm kind of blown away at how quickly and how satisfactorily I can see investing in young women today really pays out. If an older woman feels like our lives haven't really reflected our dreams and our ideals, I really encourage you to get involved in the lives of young women, because this generation is going to do a lot. And Audre Lorde was a big influence on me, and to see her influence just grow doesn't surprise me at all. And that's about all I want to say.
Thank you so much for calling, Kat. 1-800-958-9008 is the number to call. We are looking for people to call to comment about what you've heard so far this hour. Ask a question of my guest, Lynette, who is a Southern California millennial feminist and is my guest. 1-800-958-9008. This is the Sunday Show. My name is Vilma V, and we are celebrating International Women's Day. Lynette, what is your feminist icons and why?
Well, besides the great Dr. Catwoman, who you know, I know I keep harping on it, but my icon is Mamie Till Mobley. And I had the honor of spending, you know, my early life with her. She was a woman who in 1955 was raising a teenaged boy who basically told her that, hey, mama, if you, you know, bring home the bread, make the money, you go out and work, I'll do everything else. So in 1955, she was raising an enlightened young man who was doing the cooking, who was doing all the cleaning, who was doing all of the housework and felt no qualms about it, you know? And when he was killed, she said, hey, you know, she stood up to the authority in Mississippi, who didn't want to allow her to see the body of her own son and insisted that it be buried in the box that it was in right away. She defied that authority. She defied the authority in Chicago. She defied society and said, hey, we're going to have an open casket funeral for this child and have it televised and have pictures spread all over the country and then even at some parts in some parts of the world. And at some point, that actually spurred the part of the feminist movement where they said, oh, okay, light bulb moment, we're going to use motherhood as validation for our movement, because that was the tool that they had at that time, you know, mm-hmm. because that was what validated women, and in some places that is still what validates women is motherhood. But yeah, she doesn't get a lot of praise, but she was an amazing woman and far ahead of her time as far as how she was raising the men in her life.
Yes. Okay. The phone number 1-800-958-9008. You're listening to the Sunday Show. My name is Vilma V. I'm here with my guest, Lynette. She is a millennial from Southern California. And Lynette, let me ask you this. Let me find it. The phrase human rights, women's rights are human rights. What does that mean to you? Do you know? Are you familiar with that phrase?
I am not, actually, but it's something that I have been saying just kind of independently. And I thought it was something that I made up. yeah, well, I mean, if an ism is an ism is an ism, feminism isn't about, like I said, raising one gender above another and putting down another one. Feminism is just all about making sure that we have an egalitarian society for everyone. You can't oppress one group of people without some of that oppression trickling down. But if you uplift a group of people that has been oppressed, then what does trickle down is the benefits, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Once you liberate Black people, that liberation trickles down. It's the only trickle down economic that actually works. once Black people are liberated, women are liberated, you know, people of color everywhere are liberated, we start to think about, oh, well, hey, what about these other people who are oppressed for whatever reason? Maybe they are disabled, maybe they are over a certain age, whatever. When we start to understand that it is wrong, like really understand that it is wrong to oppress any kind of one kind of people, we start to realize that it's bad to oppress any kind of people. I think, as a matter of fact, the slogan or the motto for the National Association of Colored Women back in the 1800s, I think, what they understood this, the motto was lifting as we climb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're lifting other people up as we climb. And I mean, if you look at people who are part of oppressed classes and oppressed peoples, what you start to see is that they know how to dismantle forms of oppression, and
know what needs to happen. They know what needs to not happen in order to treat people like human beings. And we try to implement that everywhere we go. People sometimes worry that, you know, oh, if we give this particular type of people, if we give women this kind of freedom and give women this kind of power, if we give it to people of color, you know, then the white people will be oppressed, then the men will be oppressed. And that's what we're trying to do is the exact opposite. We're trying to eradicate all of these systems that would have anyone be oppressed. So my suggestion to men and, you know, to people who may not be of color and are benefiting from the status quo and worried that that if we get some equal power or some equal rights, that it means that it is your downfall. It's not. Just get out of our way. Just get out of our way so that we can help you help, so that we can help you, basically.
Yes. That's the voice of Lynette. She's my guest this morning. She's a writer and inclusion consultant in the Los Angeles area. Okay, we haven't gotten a lot of calls here. I have another one that I'm about to put on, but really, I thought this topic was going to just have the phones light up, and in all honesty, it really hasn't. And I know that Philip has a huge audience on Sunday. It's 10 a.m. Not everyone's asleep right now. So let's, you know, we have about 10 minutes left, or actually about 7 minutes left, but I'd love to hear from you. 1-800-958-9008. You're listening to Special International Women's Day Programming. I'm Vilma V, subbing in for the Sunday show, Philip's show. He'll be back next week. Okay, let's, Jean from Marin County, you're on the air.
Thank you. I don't know if this is appropriate. I just tuned in late, but I just wanted to add this comment for the sake of the dialogue concerning the nature of labeling, which is what the mind does best. It categorizes and then puts things in a little convenient little pocket to throw out, given the occasion. So the nature of labeling is applying a metaphor in a way that can control a discussion. But I don't think it really lends to any kind of change itself to any kind of change. So, I mean, whether or not this makes sense to whoever does, this might even be helpful.
Okay, and thank you for calling in, Gene. I appreciate it. 1-800-958-9008 is the number to call. 1-800-958-9008. Lynette, do you have any response, any comments about that?
I mean, I would only ask, well, you know, what do we do? Should we not call it anything at all? I mean, the mind categorizes things, like he said, that's true, but there's a reason that we do that. It's, I mean, again, like I said, let's categorize all the allergens, you know, so that we can know what is harmful to some people. I don't understand why people are afraid of labeling behavior.
Yeah, I know. It's a trap. And I think it comes from, you know, we just live in an age where there's a lot of dialogue has been shut down and people just, you know, so we were like, okay, I'm getting some calls now. So let's try to make our responses brief so I can get these people in. And this is a woman, Penelope. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Penelope.
Penelope, sorry. Yeah.
An ancient name.
Of course, and I mispronounced it. Penelope, of course. Okay. Sorry.
I'm thinking
Greek,
a lot,
right?
Yes, exactly. It's quite a story also of a strong woman who withstood a lot of misogynistic energy in order to further her own needs and goals. But at any rate, I'm calling because my first thoughts about feminism are how much we need to dedicate ourselves to the first woman, which is our Mother Earth. And she's crying out for our help at all times. And yes, you know, we there are needs that are much more immediate in our lives with each other and our families and just our society. But you know, at the top of the list for me is my caring and concern about the overall health of our Mother Earth. And I would really like to see, and I really place a lot of hope in young people. I mean, look at Greta, you know, Thunberg. She's like speaking out, you know, in the face of all of this, you know, horrid rejection, and she's just she's staying strong, and she's really a symbol of what feminist energy can do, and the courage that we can muster up, because it's a big job, ladies. It's a huge job. I've watched in my 77 years a lot of degradation going down on our mother, and it's pained me deeply.
Thank you. Thank you, Penelope, for bringing that in. Mother Earth, of course. Thank you so much. Now I'm going to go to Joyce in Cupertino. Go ahead, Joyce. You're on the Sunday show. Okay, let's try that. Let's go Charlie from Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the Sunday show.
Hi. I wanted to talk about Clubhouse. Because there were a lot of really racist things towards, you know, like black women. There were chats about how do we respect black women now, and there were absolutely no black women in the chat, no black moderators, and it was awful. And they were just talking about, yeah, we have to, you know, be nice to them more, or, you know, and all of it was just so ignorant. And I don't know, Lynette, how do you feel about that? You know, like, me as a black woman, I don't feel, I hated that. I thought it was, I had all kinds of emotions.
Okay, Charlie, I've got the tyranny of the clock here, so thank you for calling. I appreciate it. For those who don't know, Clubhouse is sort of an invitation-only audio social media platform that's just come out, and it's sort of like there's chat. It's very audio based. It's not visual, and it's interesting to know that there's no black women there. Of course, new technologies roll out, and many times there's not any people of color, and they don't even miss it. And then all this sort of racism crops up, and you realize how detrimental it could be. I think I'm going to squeeze in one more. You have 30 seconds. Let's do Joyce from Cupertino. You have 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Okay, I wanted to bring in nonviolent communication. Our minds categorize things. We need to do that to understand the world. But at the same time, these short labels calling somebody a something is not helpful to bringing people together and understanding. So, you know, when I hear you say such and such, you know, it takes away my opportunity, or I don't feel the opportunity to be able to communicate with you, which I really want to do. You know, this is like too fast to say it, and I didn't even do a good job. But anyway, I urge people to look at Center for Nonviolent Communication and get like a beautiful way for yourself and to be more peaceful and in communication with the world. I know it's helped me.
Yes, so. It has. I appreciate it. And I believe next time we go live here on KPFA is on Talk It Out Radio, which is all about nonviolent communication. And that's today at 7 p.m. So you can tune into that. I need to go. It's only,
okay.
I'm here at the end of the hour. It's been such a pleasure to spend an hour with you on this special day of International Women's Day programming. I want to thank my guests, Lynette from Los Angeles, Millennial,
thank
Mia,
you.
Generation Z. Thank you to Miss Mickey Mays at the controls. Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Brings back so many wonderful memories. Thank you for listening. Thank you again for donating to our recent fund drive. So we totally appreciate it. Made our goal. Amazing. I can't remember the last time that's happened. So please tune in all day. Tell your friends to do so. We're going to be on till 1 a.m. And we go on till very late. Thank you so much for listening.